So I'm Hal Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. It is 12 minutes past the hour of 8. David Abramson, psychologist in private practice, is in a studio. And I've asked David, if we suffer from borderline personality disorder when it comes to our politicians, because we do seem to either think of them as all good or all bad. Why can't we see our politicians as real people and note that they are good at some things and quite poor at others? Now, obviously, the risk is pathologizing everybody, but you know what? We're in 2019. We do that, right?
Absolutely.
Right. There we go. David, it was nice chatting to you.
Thank you, Howard. See you next week.
Right, exactly. So, David, your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, there is such a thing called political psychology, which looks into how political parties work, how people think when it comes to their politicians and how they vote. And there's some fascinating ideas that come out of this discipline. And one of them being, which I think is important to remember when we start talking about politics, is that we all have our own births and we all have our own beginnings. And with that comes something called moral foundations. And this concept really defines us moving forward. You know, if you think about it, if you're a liberal, your moral foundations are around equality, around fairness, around protection of the vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're conservative, your moral foundations, you know, favor in-group loyalty, moral purity, and very importantly, respect for authority. So I think for me,
so that's our beginning step.
That's our beginning step. And that's how we are, because we're talking from a psychological perspective. That's how we are parented, and that's where how we are socialized. And, you know, that's the group that we are brought into the world with, and we often take on their moral foundation.
So would that be a reason, for example, why, let's say, with the Brett Kavanaugh and Professor Ford situation, we're all, literally, all Democrats, I mean, obviously there was, but certainly in government, all Democrats supported her, and all Republicans supported him. There was no one that said, hold on, I believe him. I'm a Democrat and I believe him. Because we've got to stick to what our belief system is.
And absolutely, Howard, such a good point, because then we talk about moving into things like tribality, idea of being, you know, tribal and sticking to our groups. And it's interesting again where and it's so great to say that, you know, nowadays they have done studies and done so many studies on so many psychological, aspects. And one of them is around, one's choice of political party and how fascinatingly that even it's got nothing to do with intellect. You know, we're talking about some very, very bright people. We're not talking about people
on all sides of the political spectrum.
Yeah, we're not talking about people who are not educated.
Right.
But what they found, which is really mind-boggling, is that they will follow the more facts they have, actually, the more rigid they become in their thinking, in following their group.
Okay, say that again so that I can understand it.
So, again, it becomes so emotional that you are inclined to follow and look for facts that support your view, whether it's conservative or liberal, if we're dividing it into those two parts, that it's not about intellect. It's about trying to find the stats and understanding what information they can get from the environment and using it to support your
So it's confirmation bias, effectively, what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's why I think it's, you know, we find it so difficult to move from one party to the next to try and, you know, actually stop.
Because what we've done is confirmed and reconfirmed and reconfirmed our own political belief all the time. And especially in the age of the internet, there's so much information out there that it's so easy to confirm your bias.
And which is another important point, Howard. Uh-huh. And again, you know, since Trump comes in and Brexit, the two, two situations which have really kind of perplexed the world. How can educated people or how can people put themselves in this situation? When you think about things like Brexit, that people have voted, the majority, but it was very close, voted for a situation where they are actually putting their economy at huge risk. And interesting, people talk about, you know, the war. you know, in the war we did it, you know, in World War II we did it and we survived and we could do it through Brexit. But the difference being that Brexit you've brought upon yourselves. And the point being that, you know, when we look at psychology, politics has got a very, very, well, psychology has got a very broad and important role to play in politics, because what we've also seen is that when politicians give a very clear, precise messages that aren't too complicated, people tend to follow them. And once they've actually followed them on very broad points, then they don't, they're not too concerned about the finer detail. So if, for example, they did an experiment where they said Trump, you know, believed in a certain policy. And that's all that his supporters needed to hear, that Trump followed it. So then they would. And if you weren't a Trump supporter, then you wouldn't. So again, you know, I think, people generally look at, you know, following someone who more or less has a very, very, who has your same kind of moral foundations, and then has, and then also very, very important about ownership. If you feel like you can contribute to this vision that this person is, you know, this person is projecting, and that you can be part of it. But actually, once you're on board, there's very little thinking that goes on.
So it's quite interesting, because given the South African context, I was having a conversation with somebody the other day. The Jewish community has traditionally voted DA, and there's a lot of, I don't know if it's discomfort, people are thinking and they saying, well, maybe we need to support Ramaphosa, but then the ANC is this or that, whatever it is. I believe that even if somebody has taken the decision to vote for another party, never mind the ANC, whichever that other party is, when they get into that voting booth, I think it is significantly harder to put your vote in front of a political party that you haven't yet voted for.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question. I think our moral foundations are so deeply ingrained.
Entrenched.
Yeah, and entrenched in our psyche, that it is so difficult to actually, which sounds so simple, to actually look at what each party is presenting and saying, and what each party stands for, and, really voting with our, you know, with our moral conscience. And I think it is very difficult to change. Very, very difficult to change.
So I think people might talk about changing.
Yes.
A lot. And I think that's why it's quite fascinating, because I think that's why the polls are starting to often get these things wrong now. We saw it with Trump, and we saw it with Brexit. We see it over and over again, where people are asked the question, they base their projections on that, and then it doesn't turn out that way.
Yeah.
I think that when people are standing alone in that voting booth, it's very different. I think it's Dan Ariely as well. He doesn't talk about it in this way. He speaks about making moral or immoral decisions. And he says, you know, you can ask somebody in the cold light of day what they would do in a given situation. But invariably, we don't even know ourselves, because given the right, I don't know, levels of stimulants, whether it's alcohol, whether it's sexual drive, whether it's no matter what it is, we might very well make another decision.
Well, there's also another concept called motivated cognition.
Oh, I like that.
Do you like
motivated cognition? Zanati, write that down.
Yes.
Why are you doing it?
Motivated
reasoning.
No, stop. Can we just stick with motivated cognition?
Same thing.
We can't learn the synonyms if we haven't even learned the first word.
Well, let me say that. Right. Let me explain that. Really, what that is that we look at situations and we interpret situations from the team we support.
Right.
So, you know, we have such strong perceptions. So, for example, when Trump came into power, you know, before he came into power, you know, the weeks leading up to it, up to the election, the Democrats were saying how excellent the economy is doing. And once Trump was in power, suddenly the economy wasn't doing so well. So it really, same economy, a few weeks later, it's really about that, about your perspective and who's in power and supporting that person in power. So, you know, we can't ignore a very sociological kind of idea of tribalism where people kind of stick to their team right. no matter what. And that's the same thing, Howard, getting into that, to answer your question, you get into that booth. And do you stick with your team or do you not?
Much harder.
Much harder.
To change. I'd love your thoughts on a 34519 or 0618951019. I am seeing quite a few messages with regard to Brexit. I don't want to go there because it isn't it. We're just using it as an example. I don't really want to get into a Brexit situation. Zach says, in economics, we see that when times are tough, economically people will be less scared to change the vote, whereas when it's just a change in normal times, people are more scared or more resistant to change their voting patterns. That's from Zach. That's very interesting.
You know, when we look at like this,
which means that now, sorry, David,
yeah, no.
which means this election that we're coming into, we're moving towards, is probably the one, according to what Zach is saying, on an economic principle basis, that might cause people to change because we are in economically very, very challenging times.
I think, you know, when we're talking about the ANC, who's been in government for so many years now, we saw that in the last elections, you know, that their political base was eroded to a degree, but still had so much support.
Right.
And if you think about it, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense from a logical point of view because of all the promises that have been broken or the economic difficulties that still exist and the inequalities that still exist in the country. But again, we talk about that voting. How does someone who has supported the ANC for so long ignore all of that and say, actually, yes, I need to vote for the DA, even though my team.
Right. Of course, you know, I'm using the example of saying that Jewish communities often voted for the DA.
Right.
But many in other communities have traditionally voted for the ANC, maybe because the ANC was a freedom fighter party. They were the ones who birthed Nelson Mandela, who brought the transition to South Africa and many other great people as well. So, can I now go against my own heritage and my own past in order to vote for an alternate party? It's a very, very scary thing.
It is a very, very scary thing. And I think for me, that's what we've seen, particularly in this country, where it's been very, very difficult for people to say, hang on, you know, in a very rational way and leave the emotions behind. Which team did I support in the past? Is this political party serving me? And that's why we see, I think, things like Brexit and we see like Trump being elected.
Right.
Because
right.
people often, vote for their team. I mean, there's so much more to it.
Mm.
One of them being fear, which we
I want to talk about that when we get back. Time is 8:25. I'd love your thoughts on a 34519 or 0618951019. Clive says, look at the facts. See how an economy is doing under Obama, 1% growth, Trump, 3.5% growth. I think the point that David is making is that we seek confirmation bias and we actually ignore the facts very often in order to support our own team.
And then we talk about fake news. And that's where fake news comes from, is that we tend to take information and manipulate it according to our moral foundation.
31, I'm Howard Feldman. This is Your Morning Mayhem on 101.9 Chai FM. And science says, it reminds me of a slogan, you can stay as you are for the rest of your life or you can change to mainstay. I now split my vote between the DA and the ACDP. And that's from NRA. All right. We're talking about almost, the psychological approach to politics and politicians. And what you're saying, David, is because we spend so much time, I think this is what you're saying, because we spend so much time confirming our bias towards a group, a party, a leader, etc., we almost refuse to hear the negative about them, even though it actually makes them more real, more accessible, maybe even more relevant. Mm-hmm. But we don't hear it because we are fearful, maybe, mm-hmm. to engage in anything negative. So what that means is we almost, I think you've used the word before, split, where somebody's either all good or all bad. You are with me or against me. You're a friend or foe. Would that be an accurate summary of this?
I think you've summed it up very well. And I think, again, In American politics, we see that very, very clearly, where a personality like Trump has made that very, very clear.
It's binary. There's no such thing as saying, you know what, I mean, listen, I do hold this view, is that Trump as a personality scares the bejeebies out of me. I don't like some of his references to women. I don't like the fact that I don't really know who he is as nuanced personality. But on the other hand, I think he's done some tremendous, tremendously positive and good things.
Well, I think that's the point, is that it's very, very difficult to I mean, there's a concept called Parkinson's law of triviality.
That's write that down, Zanati. That's now number two. I know we are learning a lot this morning. Parkinson's law of
triviality.
Triviality. And we love that. We don't know what it means yet, but we love it.
Well, let me explain.
Thank you, David.
People are willing to spend more time and effort on something trivial, they do understand, than something complicated that they don't.
Oh, I love that. I really do hope you did write that down. That's got my name all over it.
We don't like to struggle to understand our politicians. So we're willing to believe a simple soundbite on a subject that hasn't got a very complicated explanation. And that's what really successful politicians do. They make it
easily accessible,
issues uncomplicated, and we'd rather tend to believe the simplest answers or solutions, even if they're a bit diluted and not that realistic.
Parkinson's
law of triviality.
Law of triviality. Wow. So, I think that's genius, because that's exactly what happens. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe why, because I always wonder about this. Why, as a media consumer, do we often go for the simple, uncomplicated issues that are so much less relevant, and we talk about them and debate them and feel all sorts of emotions, but some of the very, very important, real and complex issues we refuse to engage in?
Well, I think that explains it. And again, the point being that even if you know, the politician dilutes the solution, and we're not talking about, again, people might say, oh, well, you know, of course, it's uneducated people.
Right.
We're even talking about very educated intellectual thinkers who, you know, who actually would follow someone because they are explaining something which makes sense to them.
Right.
And if it makes sense to them, then you can follow it. And if you follow it, well, okay, well, then you're on board. But the bottom line is that absolutely – that by nature, we would rather have things explained to us in a very clear, concise way that we can understand. And so that's what good politicians do. They make it very clear and concise. The difficulty being that, again, we've seen it from research, that once a politician has got a person believing them and following them on the bigger issues, even in simple terms, which have been diluted,
right.
They will follow them on the smaller issues and relatively smaller issues if they hear that their man, their group actually follows it. So we stop to think. We actually stop. So, I mean, when we think about it, do we know what our party stands for, you know, or stands on agricultural stuff and on the smaller issues? We don't. We go, well, it's the DA, we'll follow them, or it's the ANC, so we'll follow them.
Right.
But the bigger issues, we make them simple. We make them solvable, even though the solutions are not as doable or realistic as it might be. And then we're hooked.
So, extrapolating that a little bit further, could that be why the anti-Israel lobby is, to some extent, fairly powerful, because they've reduced a very, very complex historical conflict to one of sound bites and images?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. And I think it has been, you know, it's again simplified to the vulnerable versus the strong, evil versus good. And again, you know, when we simplify very, very complicated political and socioeconomic situations to that, then we have this, you know, just choosing of sides. And as you called it, the splitting, you're either for Israel or you're against Israel. And, you know, it's easy to, and it's human nature, I think, to support the underdog, the people who are seen, who are seen to be persecuted, if
right.
that's the perception
right.
that has been
right.
Built. So again, easy solution is these very broad solutions, but it, and then people support that. You know, so we talk about extreme solutions. We will destroy Israel. That's an easy solution. It's
right,
a simple solution.
Right.
Is it workable? Is it productive? Is it even going to happen? Probably not. Please God.
Right, right.
But again, there you have people just following a very simple, broad solution. They don't have to think about it.
Right. All right. Time is 8:38. I would absolutely love to hear from you on 34519 or 061-895-1019. RS says you are now quoting Malcolm X. Soon you'll be quoting Louis Farrakhan. How did you know? She's actually, Zanati's got Louis Farrakhan ready for the 8 o'clock news.
Nine.
I meant that. Oh. Always got to correct me, Zanati. You're like, you know what? You might as well be one of our listeners. Time is 8:38. Nikki says Zuma brought South Africa to its knees, yet still has his followers treat him as the Pied Piper. Is this a cult mentality? That's from Nikki. A great question.
Well, I think it's related to what we've been saying around just following your team for want of a better description. And one follows him because you have in the past, and you follow him because that's what you've done. And there's very little, thinking involved. It's a lot of emotion. So absolutely, when we see people doing things which don't seem to be rational, we understand that there's psychology at play there. There's irrationality at play. And it's very, very, very powerful.
Incredible. I'm chatting to David Abramson. He is a psychologist in a private practice. We are running a little bit late with regard to Lubomir Khitsa. He's having a few technical issues. I want to go back to a conversation that I started earlier. And Zanati, I ask your thoughts on it. I'd love everybody's thoughts on it. DC Comics drops plans for a Jesus superhero series after complaints. So I found this fascinating. DC Comics has dropped plans to publish a series that imagines Jesus Christ returning to Earth and teaming up with superheroes after a campaign called The Work Blasphemous. Very, very interesting. The Second Coming will not be published next month by Vertigo, a unit of DC Comics as originally planned. Now, interestingly enough, the complaint comes from within the Christian community and not people outside of the Christian community who say, hold on a minute, he's not necessarily relevant to all other religions. I'd love your thoughts on it. 34519 or 061-895-1019. Zanati, we've given you time to think. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm reading here. They're saying that he's a sidekick.
No, he is Deputy Jesus.
Basically, why would you?
Do you think that's the complaint? No, that's not the complaint. It's the fact that he's a superhero.
Oh my goodness! I don't know. It's very tricky.
Mm-hmm. Give me your thoughts.
I would honestly love to see it, but I feel like it's such a sensitive subject that there's a certain way that Christians want to see Jesus, and I don't think they want to see him as a superhero or sidekick to a superhero.
Yo, he's no one's sidekick. I mean, that's just not going to work.
For me, honestly, I don't think I'm that sensitive about it because I love superhero movies and I think that it would be interesting to see Jesus in that light.
But what happens if he was represented in a way that conflicted with perceived him?
That's now the problem. So I don't know.
It is looking for trouble. That's for sure. David, your thoughts?
Absolutely. Who's he going to fight? And what's the evil he's
going
to fight?
I didn't think of that. Ooh.
Which can get very complicated. And then Jesus is fighting the enemy.
And I don't mean to be rude, but what is his superpower?
Walking on water. That's not going to happen.
Can't just be that.
No, it can't just be that. Can't just be that.
So it gets
okay, Zanati. As a practicing, a religious practicing Christian, what do you think the superpower should be?
No, but that's,
you see, that's the problem.
Everything, though.
That's the point, is he represents so much in terms of everything to you with regard to religion. How do you reduce a figure like that to almost being a normal person with a superpower?
Yeah. I guess that's now another problem, is that you're literally saying that he's just like everybody.
Yes, I think that's problematic.
Level. Yeah.
Well, I would love your thoughts on this. 3, 4, 5. I know it's complicated. I know it's a hard conversation, but it is such an interesting conversation.
But that's
to
the
have.
Thing, because Jesus was a human being.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Right.
But he wasn't.
Right. Well, exactly. So the Christian belief is that, but to reduce, you know, it's interesting, of course, because Islam has very, very specific prohibitions with creating images. So it's kind of, it does away with this complexity and this problem, because it could never happen within Islamic tradition or law.
And we think about Judaism, Howard.
Yes.
How would we cope with this?
Yes.
Whole situation when we, if maybe.
Oh, we would just argue and argue and we would argue. Time is 8:49.